Work-based learning is essential to our industries, and it's really, really important to the overall economy. The government has a priority of increasing productivity, and we're only going to be able to do that if we increase skills within our existing labour force, but also we better tap into some of the opportunities that, for example, are occurring with our changing demographics.
Kia ora, I'm Troy, here as Chief Executive, and welcome to Stirring the Pot. Thanks for connecting. If you're new, here's what you can expect. We're going to be talking the tough stuff, the things that keep us metal minds up at night. There are many challenges facing our industry and equally many opinions on how we should tackle them. Stirring the Pot provides a facilitated forum to discuss and challenge these viewpoints.
So let's get to the nuts and bolts of it. Today we're having a kōrero with Phil Alexander Crawford, the Chief Executive of Hanga Aroro, the Manufacturing, Engineering and Logistics Workforce Development Council.
Can you talk a little bit around what are the big issues at the moment and what's happening in vocational education now?
Yeah, I think it comes down to two big issues. The first one's around a talent shortage, and the second one is future changes in our vocational education system. So in terms of that talent shortage, just quoting a few stats here, the forecasts, and this is from Infometrics, show that through to 2029, our manufacturing, engineering and logistics sectors will need to fill over 157,000 jobs. So that's an average of about 31,500 jobs per year for the next 5 years. So that's a huge challenge, but also opportunity. But it's crucial that we do fill those roles because our country's productivity and regional growth are highly dependent on that. Know that it's a really tough time economically for our industries. But it's interesting when you look at those stats because 80% of those roles are just replacing existing roles. And obviously 20% are made up of new roles. So it's definitely a challenge that we collectively need to address. And when you look at the stats again, the reasons why we need 80% replacement of roles. The first reason is that we've got a really aging workforce who are retiring in increasing numbers. We're losing people overseas, and some are being attracted to other industries away from our industries. And you can see this broken down into sectors by looking at our workforce development plans, which we launched last week. And they give really great insights into what those top challenges and opportunities for our industries are right now. And you can find those on our website or LinkedIn page. At the same time as that occurring, there are definitely things that industry can do about those challenges, and they need to be partnering with our vocational sector to help fill those roles. Our industry has a huge impact and benefit to our economy. So collectively, our industries employ over 600,000 people, Troy. So Aotearoa New Zealand's economy is heavily dependent on us, supporting that strong workforce development. And our industries recognise those challenges and opportunities and are determined to support greater productivity. What industry are telling us with the second big issue, which is around the future of our vocational education system, is that they want the conditions and structures that encourage rather than hinder achieving those things, particularly about filling those roles, but filling the roles with really highly skilled people. And so the vocational system needs to be able to partner with industry to help achieve those outcomes. So that's the second big issue. It is what does our future vocational education training system or wider ecosystem looks like. It's often referred to as our VET system. So when we talk about vocational training, most people immediately think of trade skills, training like carpentry, electrical and so on. But vocational training is more than just that and includes any training that provides those practical skills development and which must reach a level of competency to be able to meet the standards that industry require. And the training can be classroom-based or on the job, And sometimes a combination of both. And when I talk about that standard setting, what I'm referring to is that really important and sometimes forgotten part of the VET system, the vocational education training system. So industry and our communities need to know that a learner, an apprentice or a worker have those skills and competencies to do the job and do it safely. For learners, it helps set them apart from the untrained, and it also provides pathways to better employment and into higher paid jobs. So critical function to play there, but sometimes, as I say, it's forgotten or people just aren't aware of it. So any new system, any improvements to the system, and we need to make sure that that is the strength of that function is recognised, and that any VET or vocational education sector system is working as well as it can. And the government is looking to introduce some changes around the system. Minister Simmons, our Minister for Tertiary Education and Skills, is leading the changes and has said we should expect the announcement of any proposed changes in the next few weeks. Still to be confirmed, but we'd expect that the consultation for those changes should run for 4 to 6 weeks. And the minister said that it's important that industry have their say, and we agree with that. So two big issues, definitely.
Yeah, I think that going back to the importance of vocational education for the sectors that HERA works in, which are construction and manufacturing, it's vitally important. And it's not only those technical skills, so for example, advanced welding training, but also there's an increasing need for that digital skills training, as well as I think it's pretty well recognised within the construction sector that, you know, it's so easy to start a business that probably we need to help people to get their skills up in terms of financial performance and operations, because we're so reliant on, you know, these small man, one man and his ute and his dog type operations, or woman, I should say. And yes, there have been announcements from the minister. I guess from an industry perspective, it's very unclear what is intended with regards to the industry voice in that process. And I would say that certainly from our perspective, there hasn't been a lot of engagement with industry around announcements. So we're seeing announcements, for example, like the minister is intending to deconstruct the workforce development councils, and there's really no strategy that, or even bigger picture around what is the plan then for industry voice in the vocational education system. So you did mention the consultation process. What would you want to see in that consultation process?
Yeah. Really good points. I think there's a hope from industry that there'll be a strategic view of the sector as much as the more micro sort of approach to the consultation that may come. What that means is that industry see a vision for vocational education, as well as the detail around how the system will be structured. So definitely hoping for that. Of course, any proposed changes have come off the back of a lot of previous change, which occurred under what was known as the ROVE, or the Reform of Vocational Education, that the Labor government implemented. And of course, we haven't seen much detail or any strong detail around the proposed changes we're already hearing about possibly coming. But from industry, there is a lot of engagement fatigue. And so under those ROVE reforms, there was a huge amount of consultation, subsequent change, and then the industry needed to not only understand those changes, but also buy into them. So what's crucial going forward with any further change is that industry are showing that overall strategy, but also are involved right along the way. Because the consultation, say it was for a period between 4 and 6 weeks. Of course, the design doesn't stop there of a new system. That could continue up to 6 months after the consultation finishes. So really important that industry become involved. And for us as an organisation, as Hanga Arero, we do whatever we can to remove barriers to industry having that input. not only at the consultation, but also during the design phase of any changes. What we've heard from industry around any prospective changes is they want a system they can trust to work for them and Aotearoa New Zealand. So recognising that industry and the vocational sector aren't islands, it's all needing to be part of a joined up collective approach and system. And industry really need the right mix of skills and the right numbers and a system that will achieve that. And picking up on your earlier point, Troy, they were called soft skills, but they're now referred, I think, rightly as transferable skills. And those are qualification specific or trade specific skills. But they're also things like financial literacy and communication skills, leadership skills. It's those sort of things that will often support someone working from a labouring position through to a leadership position. And that's what we're needing to see. We're needing to see that greater progression for all our workforce and to remove the barriers to that happening. Mm-hmm. And industry is so integral to all of this because, of course, a lot of the training is carried out in their workplaces. But also they are the ones that employ the people that are coming out of our education system, whether that's directly from school or whether it's as part of a polytech classroom type of training or whether it's work-based learning, which of course included in that work-based learning, it's about retraining people as much as receiving new people into the industry. So industry understands and understands the needs, and it's really important that the wider system is aware of that as well.
I think in response to your comments, I think a lot of what you're talking about there is really important to developing vocational education as a really esteemed career pathway. And so those leadership development qualities are really important, and also really important in, you know, in terms of particularly manufacturing and construction's lagging a little bit behind, but you know, that construction 4.0, manufacturing in or industry 4.0, really that preparation for what's coming over the horizon. In terms of the consultation process, I think that adding to your comments, what is missing from my perspective is it's important for us to have a feel that there's genuine consultation. And I think for me, the concern is that it seems as though the minister has already decided that workforce development councils need to be done away with, but there hasn't been consultation with industry around how do we see the Workforce Development Councils? What value do we see that they have provided? Is that a better system than what we had before? And is it something that we want to continue with? And I think from the industry perspective, or from the perspective of most construction and manufacturing industries or subsectors, there's really an acknowledgement that the Workforce Development Councils do add value and that it's crucially important to maintain that industry voice. What feedback are you getting from other parts of the Hanga Aotearoa sector representation about the performance of workforce development councils?
Yeah, so we've received really positive feedback around the qualifications, the standard setting, and the engagement that we've had with industry. Of course, industry, our three industries are made, as I noted, there's about 110,000 businesses employing over 600,000 people. So we're still early in our development. But saying that, we've had a lot of great successes and that's using the model of partnership with industry. But there's a lot more work to be done. And of course, industry views are as diverse as any others. So what I'm sure we will see is different views around future structures. But certainly for us as a Workforce Development Council, and you know, I'm proud to talk about the achievements and the difference that we have made and will continue to make until we know what the new system potentially will look like. And we'll certainly support a transition through to any new system. Certainly in our core functions, of course, we've got the function of giving advice to TEC around what to, so the Tertiary Education Commission, who fund vocational education. And so with that function of giving that advice, we've certainly advocated strongly for industry's needs and training, and where we believe that TEC funding should go to support our industries. On a practical level around the standard setting, over the last 12 months, for example, we've developed in partnership with industry 16 micro-credentials with another awaiting NZQA approval, 25 skill standards with another 49 awaiting NZQA approval, and to ensure consistency of skills, which is one of our duties, we've reviewed 41 qualifications with another 21 awaiting NZQA approval and 493 unit standards. The reason I give you the figures, Troy, is because often in a system that micro detail isn't advocated for strongly enough. So whatever system that the minister and her officials decides is the right one, this mahi or this work still needs to be completed by some system. I think where some of the debate will occur is around whether that standard setting should be incorporated into the organisations providing the training. And of course, where our system has evolved to, or where it came from, was where there was a clear difference between the Polytech system and ITOs, or industry training organisations. So under the old system, there was a merge of that training and standard setting. And so when the vocational sector was reformed under our previous government, they separated that off. And it's one of the things that came over, that standard setting came over to Workforce Development Council. So it's going to be a crucial decision that the government needs to make around whether that's brought over and connected directly with the training of our workers or our labour force, or whether it's kept separate. And that'll come down to whether industry and other stakeholders in the government decide that that the independence of that skill setting is worth keeping separate, or to bring it back over to sit alongside whatever organisation's delivering the training.
I think that one of the promises of ROVE, the reforms of vocational education under the previous government, was that that WDCs would have a lot of influence within the sector, and particularly within the funding mechanisms, and thereby industry would have much more influence. Do you think that has played out in terms of Workforce Development Councils having influence within the system? And if that isn't ideal, how do you think that could be improved in a system moving forward?
Yeah, I think the system can be enhanced. I think that just as Polytechs under the old system or ITOs are not an island nor a Workforce Development Council, I think that the whole system needs to be more joined up. And so the potential of that function in particular around giving advice to the Tertiary Education Commission on what to fund in vocational education, I think it's got some great opportunity to expand that. Certainly made no secret to government that we would see an opportunity to engage with other parts of the education system, including universities, because of course universities also deliver similar vocational education outcomes to polytechnics, and of course we also have private training enterprises, so PTEs, and so the ones that are delivering the training do include organisations such as universities. So we would like to see the function of giving advice to TEC to actually extend out towards universities. And it's been great over the last 2.5 years because a number of universities have engaged with us because they have recognised a greater need for industry input into what they are putting on the ground in terms of training. And so I think there's some appetite for that internally, but I think it would add another element to having industry influencing that other part of the system. A couple of other points I'd make too, remembering that for our industries, the importance of PTEs. So 80% of the training is provided by Te Pūkenga, because of course Te Pūkenga was where ITOs and Polytechs were pulled under the same umbrella. So 80% of our training is delivered by Te Pūkenga or parts of Te Pūkenga, but 20% are delivered by PTEs. So they are an important part to supporting our industry's objectives and that training component there. On top of that, our schools also provide training, and we do moderate delivery in schools as part of our overall function. And so hopefully I'm sort of painting the picture that it's an interconnected system. And when we have a duty, as we do in our empowering legislation, to advocate for industry, we're taking that really seriously. So we've advocated across into other parts of the system, including in New Zealand Qualifications Authority, or NZQA, MOE, the Ministry of Education, TEC, who I've spoken about. We've made sure that we've advocated over there for industry's interests as well. So whatever system we arrive at, I just would really hate to see those good things that have occurred over the last 2.5 years be lost. And what I think, and what as an organisation we truly believe in, is that there are parts that can be changed, but there are some good things that need to be retained and built on and improved. So we're hoping for industry that the new system will recognise those things that are working and should be kept. But I'm always a believer in a system being enhanced and constant improvement. So we'll see what comes through.
I do think that there is a missed opportunity at looking at things from a bigger picture around a workforce development and an industry insights lens. That really there's no other organisations other than the WDCs that have the understanding and insights relating to the industries that they're representing than WDCs. And it's a real shame that though that intelligence isn't used in a broader way, even beyond vocational education. There's so much knowledge and really that comes from the closeness of those relationships that are developed, but the insights are much more applicable, or have the opportunity to be more applicable outside of just vocational education. I think that one of the questions I would have is, what are some ways that you see our industry in particular engaging with hunga ararau? So really looking at welding and fabrication in particular, the way that I see HERA's interactions is that usually the equivalent of an undergraduate qualification will be coming through you know, a qualification that involves hunga ararau, and then HERA we provide the postgraduate qualifications in more advanced welding through our International Institute of Welding connections. What do you see there as particular references to our industries?
Yeah, look, over the last 2.5 years, as well as working in the qualification space, we've advocated for industry, as I say, over the whole system. And, you know, when you break it down to the parts where we can deliver specifically for your members, firstly, a big thanks to many of your members that have supported us with qualification development, with feedback around existing qualifications that are being delivered, also advice around what your industry members need. We've got 120 industry representatives throughout the Rohis, through the regions, who sit on our national industry advisory groups, the NIATs, as well as being involved in our industry stakeholder group. So many of your members, or some of your members, do sit on those groups. There's also constant contact between our industry managers and our qualification system developers with industry, and we're always open to industry contacting us directly around their needs. The great thing about industry is that they're very direct with their feedback. They're busy people, and whether it's in the qual space or wider issues, they don't hold back when they give us that feedback. So we wouldn't have been able to achieve what we have been able to achieve to date with either the qualifications or that wider influence on the system. So we can always be contacted via our website or LinkedIn page. And of course, we are constantly, both myself and our Deputy Chief Executive, Sam McNaughton, or other members of the team, are constantly engaging across industry, whether that's via conferences or attending board meetings, as we are connecting through to industry advocates there. And so, yeah, really encourage any contact possible that any of your members wish to have. And we will continue to reach out, not only in terms of the welding and fabrication qualifications, but also in terms of some of those transferable skills that should be embedded across all qualifications.
So the really important aspects of the WDCs is really not, from our perspective, not so much the core functions of the WDC or any vocational education system, but the additional responsibilities that were created as a result of WDCs, which is really that industry input, that industry voice, that direct advocacy and engagement to make sure that industry's needs are covered. Is really important in our consultation process. We'd be encouraging our members to put forward their experiences and what they see as the importance of the industry voice. I think the other interesting thing in the consultation process is that, you know, there wasn't a large budget allocation to vocational education. So it'd be interesting to see how these changes will be supported. And there also wasn't a lot of discussion around workplace-based training. So, yeah, I think that's probably, especially for our industry, something that we need to get across as being really important and something that it continues to be funded and focused on.
Yeah, good feedback, Troy. I mean, it's essential. Work-based learning is essential to our industries, and it's really, really important to the overall economy. The government has a priority of increasing productivity, exports, and we're only going to be able to do that if we increase skills within our existing labour force, but also we tap into some of the opportunities that for example are occurring with our changing demographics, and it's a point I'd really like to make, because some of these issues and challenges and opportunities are going to be the same after a consultation period. They're going to be the same after a decision is made. And it'll be the same opportunities and challenges after the new structures, if we see new structures as being established, they'll still be there. And so I'm hopeful that the ball won't be dropped across the system during this period of development and transition. So on top of making sure that we take the good things through to a new system, also, we've got to make sure that the training continues, that the standard setting continues, that industry voice and other stakeholders have a say in how the system delivers for our wider community and economy's needs. I'll give you some stats around some of the opportunities that exist, Troy, because what's really clear is we're seeing a change in demographics. So the latest census was really, really clear around a growth in Māori and Pacific populations, particularly of working age ages. And that's the sort of advocacy that we've also undertaken over the last 2.5 years, because we haven't also been tied up with the training side of it. It's allowed us that space to have corridor discussions with industry, see where industry have joined that journey already, but also to advocate not only into the system, but also back to industry around those sort of opportunities. So definitely in the Māori and Pacific, and also in the disabled community. So the stats are pretty clear, clearly understood. I'm hoping it for the change in our Māori and Pacific population, but I'll give you those stats just very quickly. So we're seeing the Māori population growing at twice the rate of the total population, and it's a very youthful population. So the working age, so that's 15 years plus, Māori population is expected to reach about 790,000. That's the working age population by 2033. I swear every year it gets faster as you get older. Well, by 2033, we're also looking at the projected Māori labour force reaching about 540,000. So there's big numbers increasingly. For our industries in manufacturing, it sits at about 16% of our industry, of our manufacturing industry, are Māori, about 9.2% engineering and 17% logistics. And we, the majority of all Māori in employment in any sector are either employed, this is really interesting, either employed as professionals, so that's about 72,000, or the next largest group is 69,000, that's labourers. So there's a huge opportunity there to not only attract more Māori into our workforce, but also focus in on moving as many of those Māori that are sitting in labouring positions, which about 69,000 of them, moving them onto higher skilled and therefore normally higher paid jobs. In the Pacific space, we know our whānau is also increasingly youthful, with a median age of about 23.4 years for our Pacific whānau. And again, where our industries are the largest employer of Pacific people in New Zealand. So again, a huge opportunity to increase the skills and therefore the incomes and productivity of that part of our workforce. And then the last group that I think is part of an overall approach to workforce development, which of course includes immigration settings, but another large group is our disabled community. And the stats here are quite surprising for many people. So we believe that up to 23% of all industry workforces have a disability of some degree. The labour force participation rates, so that's the labour force participation rates for disabled people aged between 15 and 64 is 44.1%. That's 44.1%. And that's compared to non-disabled people of 84.7%. So there's a huge difference between able and disabled participation rates in our labour force. And the employment rate for disabled 15 to 64-year-olds was 39.4% compared with 81.7% of non-disabled people. So that's a 42.3% difference in there. These figures are as of June 2023. And I'll give you one more. The underutilisation rate for disabled people, again, aged between 15 and 64 years, was 23.8% compared with 9.6% for non-disabled people. So that's about a 14% gap. So what's clear from those stats is that we are definitely employing Māori, Pacific and disabled people in our industries and the wider economy, without question. But they're overrepresented in the lower skilled and lower paying roles, and our disabled community are heavily underutilised. Their potential and their services are heavily underutilised. So for us to increase productivity and have national and regional economic growth, these groups are integral to that. And saying that, any vocational education training system, any changes that occur to that, need to recognise that and need to be part of the solution to not only attract, retain, train, grow the level of skills, but also to remove barriers and support industry on the journey. What we've seen over the last 2.5 years is that our industries have been really receptive to knowing more about that opportunity. And we've seen across all our industries great examples of where employers have embraced those changing demographics, the opportunity as part of an overall plan to engage with those groups and to support them into employment and into higher skills. So hopeful that any new system won't drop the ball, and we are part of that existing system. So we'll keep advocating for those opportunities and helping ensure that we see that as part of an overall economic plan for Aotearoa New Zealand. So thanks for that. Hobby horse for me and the team, but it's something, Troy, that because we are freed up from the training side of it, we are able to create that sort of dialogue or that sort of environment for that dialogue and have an open discussion with industry. And I'm really grateful for industry, how frank they are in terms of their feedback. And I am fortunate to speak with a lot of industry, visit them on site, but also to attend conferences as an example, and seen even over the last 2.5 years a change with many of those attending those conferences to recognise the opportunity. And now what we've got to do is look at the barriers to all of our workforce, including those groups, and make the best that we can in our economy.
I think that there are a lot of challenges there to unpacking what you've just discussed, really starting from it's already hard to attract people into vocational education in the HERA industries. It's even harder to attract employers to participate in that process through workplace training, especially when there's so much uncertainty in the system. And that's a real risk in terms of what does that mean for the future workforce in terms of trained numbers of people. Then in terms of, you know, getting our fair share too, because of course, you know, we do have good representation of Māori and Pacific, particularly in manufacturing. But, you know, as other sectors start to understand that changing demographic and the need to appeal to those currently underserved groups, we have to compete and get our fair share of Māori Pacific people with, you know, from the disabled community. And I would say also women for our industries is another group that we need to consider bringing more into our industries. And so HERA has been working on that, you know, recognizing that if you want to be an attractive employer, you do need to create some cultural competencies as well. And that's becoming increasingly important and acknowledged, I think, within the organizations that are members of HERA. What would you like to say in terms of next steps? What do you see happening for Hanga Araro?
So for us, we're focused on business continuity. So we've got to keep delivering on our functions for industry. So we'll keep doing that. Whatever comes with the consultation, whatever comes with the design after that, whatever comes with new structures, we'll continue to deliver for industry. As part of that, We've just released our workforce development plans as of last week, and you can go through to our LinkedIn or web page to see those. So those, we'll continue to be developing those and the actions that need to be delivered on, whether it's as part of our existing structure or in any new system. We'll keep developing those actions and do whatever we can within whatever timeframes to deliver on those. We also have a Pacific industry action plan that is due to be launched, as with our industry Māori action plan. And there's some substantial disability research which the team has been working in partnership with Waihanga Araro, which is one of the other workforce development councils. And so that isn't just a report or a set of research, although the research is really strong. What it is partnering with those with lived experience and industry and employers, and making sure that there are defined actions that not only are helpful and crucial over the next 12 months, but also going forward with whatever system. And I'm glad you mentioned women in trade. So again, we've been working with Waihanga, one of the other workforce development councils, around trade careers, which is our work women in trades mahi. But again, crucial part and opportunity to help build a sustainable workforce. And that's the kaupapa, or the philosophy that we've developed as an organisation over the last 2.5 years, to see these things as an opportunity, and these groups as part of an overall workforce development plan as opportunities for our industries. But yeah, I agree with you. Our industries of manufacturing, engineering and logistics, the opportunity is there now. There are some that have embraced it. It's not far. You don't have to look far to find those examples. Give you a couple. For example, Longveld Engineering in the Waikato, who really support growing as part of their overall workforce plan within their business, their Māori workforce. You can just look at larger organisations such as KiwiRail, who have a dedicated leadership training program where the majority of those that attended that program year after year move into management positions. So I could rattle off many examples of our industries already doing it. What we've got to do is support as many of our employers to see that opportunity, and where possible, take it up. So I'm really hopeful for industry going forward, but we need to make sure that they are best positioned to engage with the consultation, and if necessary, elevate the discussions that may be coming from other parts of the community. Really important, because this minister has, Minister Simmons has said industry input is really important. So we take that duty as an organisation really seriously. And so we're going to be trying our best over the next, I'm not sure when the consultation will come out, but trying our best to remove barriers and help our industries to have their say. And I'm confident that many parts of our industry and employers are already planning that.
So there you go. Thanks for joining our conversation with Phil today. If you'd like to connect more with him, you'll find his details in the show notes. As we wrap up our discussion on vocational education and its future in Aotearoa, it's important we remember that the strength of our industry lies not just in the machinery and materials we use, but in the skills, passion and innovation of our people. The policies and educational pathways we develop today will shape the workforce of tomorrow. Food for thought till we see you next time. So hit subscribe, and if you like what you heard today, please like, review or share with any metal minds you know. Let's spread the word. If you like what you heard today, you may be interested to know that Minister Simmons is poised to release her plan of action for vocational education shortly. We recommend keeping an eye out for this and its consultation process so that you can contribute your views and have your say. Your input is crucial in shaping the future of vocational education in Aotearoa.